He will find himself with no show, battle play, the note you know. Ba-da-ba-da, tweet-tweet-o-doo. Ba-da-ba-da, tweet-tweet-o-doo. Ba-da-ba-da, ba-dee-bom, 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 ba-dee-bom. Tweet-tweet-o-doo. Ba-da-ba-da, tweet-tweet-o-doo. Ba-da-ba-da, ba-dee-bom, 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 ba-dee-bom. There's so many people who can talk and talk and talk and just say nothing, my dear lady. He will find himself with no show, better play the note you know. He will find himself with no show, better play the note you know.
K-Love weather for Anchorage and vicinity in the Matanuska Valley. Looks like good weekend weather ahead. Fair skies are predicted for tonight and tomorrow and possibly also Saturday. This evening's low should be in the low 40s. Light winds are predicted. Friday afternoon's high, same as today, the mid-60s. Saturday's outlook, fair and warm. You're listening to KKLV. K-Love in Anchorage.
Mr. Clark.
Yeah, Mr. Lewis.
Get your things together. We're heading out.
Heading out? Where?
North to Alaska, that's where.
Alaska? Did we discover that, too?
I don't know, but they want us back again.
Oh.
That's funny. I thought we saw about everything there was to see.
What's that?
Fur rendezvous. The state fair.
All right.
Binky the Bear.
I mean, we missed out on some big savings.
Savings?
During Anchorage Chrysler and Anchorage Dodge Center's cleanup campaign.
Right.
I see. Well, tell me, are these Chrysler and Dodge Centers friendly?
I hear they're very friendly.
Good traders?
They're the best.
What do you suppose we can trade them out of?
Well, for one thing, they got Cordoba.
You mean they're trying to sell a whole town?
Chrysler Cordoba, you dummy.
Oh, sure.
And they're trading them all. Clean up prices.
Well, what are we trading, fur?
I don't know what you're trading fur, but I think I'll trade for an Aspen wagon.
I mean, what are we going to trade in?
There's always our mules.
Our mules?
Uh-huh.
You really think they'd take our mules in on trade?
Well, if they do, I'll tell you one thing.
Yeah?
It won't be the last time they have a cleanup campaign.
Now sensibly located on O'Malley Road between the old and new Seward highways, B&A Super, an easy and convenient place to shop. Fully stocked shelves offering a fine selection of U.S. choice meats, prime produce, and a great selection of groceries.
You'll find it easy. It's a very sensible store.
This week, D&A is featuring regular ground beef for 77 cents a pound, 3 pounds of Crisco for $1.99, locally grown lettuce, fresh and nutritious, only 19 cents a pound, 32 ounces of Kraft Miracle Whip salad dressing for $1.15. A half gallon of Matanuska made ice cream for $1.35. Plus great back-to-school bargains. Save on these items and more at D&A Super on O'Malley Road.
You find it easy at D&A Super, a very sensible store.
It's 7:19.
Stereo 104.
Cold.
104, with all hit music, 24 hours a day.
Sold these houses, getting the savings all along the line, where now we have all these sponges called businessmen which are raking in profit along the line. So I think, you know, we need to look at the needs of Alaskans and not at the needs of these companies. They don't care about our people, only as much as they can make off us. And then not just the small industries either, but I think we ought to look at some of the larger industries. So like as has been said, that we can control the rate of development more, so we don't end up not only with a high unemployment rate because so many workers have flooded in, but when we have such high population influx that it completely tears our cities apart, where crime is just, you know, Anchorage is not anything like it used to be, and that's a reflection of that. And that's a social cost that means something to Alaskans. The other thing I'd say is that you can't trust the current banking structure to manage these loans, just turn the money over to them, because what they've done is they have not used it in rural Alaska, which needs the money more. Sure, the bankers in Anchorage are rich, but when you go to the villages, any of them, even the ones that are better off, I think that it's living conditions that people just wouldn't believe if they actually saw it. So I think we can't leave it to them. If they manage it to make the most money, or if the permanent fund is managed to make the most money, money's not going to be put into projects where it's needed most, like, you know, fishing cooperatives and things like that. The other point I want to make is that I think that some of the forms of economic organization that we've seen here lately, like the development of some cooperatives, is an important concept for the permanent fund to look into, especially in giving preference to funding those types of enterprises, especially in the native villages where it more lends itself to the cooperative culture that is already among the native people and also among non-natives. I think it's an important concept that we start, just as a matter of economic justice, to promote economic democracy in which where the people work at a place they elect their management, and they decide on the work process rather than having it shoved down their throat. People who are working right out on the line, I mean, live with this every day. And I think if you could look towards that, really the whole social picture of what it means to live in Alaska, I think perhaps the permanent fund can be used towards this end.
Thank you, Mr. Foos. Can you stay for
yes.
a few questions? Mr. Dugan?
It's not so much a question. I'd just like to, again, restate my comment that I made after Tim McGinnis was finished. We have a tendency to talk about Alaskans as though they were one thing. Well, let's put it like this. Bankers who live in Alaska, no matter how greedy or conspiratorial they might be, are also Alaskans. The appeal is not an appeal that you can deal with unless you can define Alaskans not to include conspiratorial, greedy bankers. You see the point. I mean, granted, everybody wants to make Alaska a better place to live for Alaskans. The question is, how do you do that?
I guess I'm talking about if you had to set up a nonprofit banking service of the permanent fund. Why should we guarantee their profits? What are they doing besides shuffling the paper and doing the accounting and sitting between us and our money?
So you'd be prepared to trade that off against the benefit to bankers and stockholders of banks in Alaska?
I'd say so, yes.
The existing financial structure. You'd prefer
at least
they
have,
should suffer.
At least to have some alternative to that, which there is not at this point.
Yes, Mr. Rode?
If I could ask a question of you, do you believe that...
Speak up so we can pick it up, too.
The kind of purposes you talked about, nonprofit or cooperative fisheries, canneries, and related smaller-scale businesses, do you think there's $8 billion worth of such ventures? And secondly, how are you going to get into those ventures without attracting new people and crime and all the other things which...
Well, that's a problem that's a little bit bigger issue in terms of more people coming in. I was just reading in a manpower report the other day that there's more unemployed workers in Detroit than we have in our total workforce in Alaska. So, I mean, that's the kind of magnitude of, you know, and of the economic problems down in the United States that are forcing people up here into an area that's expanding. I don't know how to deal with that. I think any kind of immigration controls are unconstitutional. I agree with what the woman said here, I can't remember your name, but about having two classes of citizens. I would never believe in anything like that. Yet somehow we have to protect ourselves.
The only way you can protect yourself is by being poor from new people coming in is by being poor and unattractive.
No, isn't that it's a constant loss. How can we gain?
I think, for example, if a lot of the revenue is put into, for example, environmental improvement, that will attract less, shall we be frank and say, undesirables than if every Alaskan lives tax-free, or if everybody can get a loan at concessional rates. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. And as I say, you really cannot, I don't see how you could ennoble the people here and make pariahs the people to come. But the only way you can get them not to come is by staying poor.
Okay, well, that's a political question we have to face, and in terms of our relationship with the United States, but I think that's beyond the scope of this here. The other thing about the $8 billion, there probably there would not be that much of a need for that much money, but I think that we could look towards, like, let's say, oil development, and even if beginning going a little slower, even if we are a little more inefficient, we'd have to really be inefficient, not be able to make money if the oil companies are going to make $98.5 billion off the Prudhoe Bay oil field. Which, if we even recovered half of that by developing these resources ourselves, we'd be far ahead. So, and one other thing I wanted to mention is I think, just in terms of having control of our resources, that we could look more towards, let's say, for our oil resource. I think it's wrong to turn it over to an oil company that's going to turn it into gasoline to drive the third Cadillac to the country. Some guy down in Arizona. I think since we know that petrochemicals are so important industries that people need. We should look more towards putting our resources like into agricultural inputs in countries where they have farm machinery standing idle because they can't get petroleum, and yet they have people starving in our country. I think if no one else will look at that, then maybe we Alaskans ought to be looking towards that also, and not just within our own borders. So.
I would like to question the figure about the 98 and wonder where it comes from.
It comes from Wainwright Security Industries. It was a report made to the legislature.
Let me add that this year, all the corporations in the United States, all over the world, in oil and everywhere else, and mostly outside Alaska, are going to make about that much in after-tax profits. That's all.
That's gross, though.
That's before taxes.
That figure
If it were after taxes, that's 49.
Well, you're also comparing annual.
Are you talking about overall the long-term future, or are you talking about any one year?
No, that's over the 20-year
life
of the field.
The other thing is that what you're talking
about... That's not a very big number.
The figure you talk about profit also doesn't include all the advertising. And of the high rates, hundreds of thousand dollars paid to managers.
It is also true that if you take all the high-paid managers and reduce them to zero, you would not affect that figure by any significant amount. In fact, it isn't even true the owners of corporations take out anything like that. What they really take out is the dividends. And the dividends are only... around a third of that, about $35 billion, currently.
Whatever it is, I guess.
And about a third of those dividends, in turn, go to workers' pension plans. So the notion that there's a huge pot of gold there that you can get a hold of is just not true.
That may be true, I think, in all industries, but wouldn't you agree that in, for example, at Prudhoe Bay development, that it's more capital intensive than maybe certain other types of industries in terms of pension plans?
Well, I'm not talking return to capital. Return to capital includes the interest, of course, as well as corporate earnings. But I'm just talking about, you said the corporation. The corporation doesn't make the money they pay out in interest. They make the corporate earnings. However, there's a widespread misapprehension about the nature of corporate earnings, and particularly how big they are.
Yeah, there's also, I think, a wide misapprehension in this case about the concept of how profitable Prudhoe Bay is. And I think that it's unwise to compare the development of Prudhoe Bay to industry in general, or even the oil industry in general, because it's a fairly special and unusual situation. I'm sure you know it's got more proven reserves than everything in Canada, and about 30% of the nation. So it's a very unusual field, and it's an unusually profitable venture that Mr. Foose is talking about. So I don't think it avails itself to really simple comparison to standard industry practices.
Yeah, just even a small cut of how much they're going to make is what's all this money is in the permanent fund is coming from. That's supposedly so much we don't even know what to do with. And that's just a fraction of it. It's a low tax compared to how other nations tax oil.
Well, but I don't know what you mean. You mean that the Alaskans should attempt to expropriate that money, or what? That hypothetical $98 billion before tax.
It's so accused.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's our resources.
Well, then, I don't know legally whether it's your resource or not, or whether you mean morally it's your
resource. Right. Well, let's say if they're going to make $98.5 billion, why
would they make $98.5 billion? That's just nonsense. They're making... They don't make $98.5 billion if that's gross. And the question is the period over which they make it. But if you're going to do that, why don't you exploit all the corporations? What's so peculiar about those corporations that they should be expropriated rather than all the other corporations?
I'd just like to interject. It's not a question of
Mr. Chairman, is there any rule on germaneness to this discussion?
Well, I was hoping that it would kind of peter out, but see what you started, Paul.
Okay, well, that...
I think we should take a break. Representative Carpenter has indicated that, you know, I was remiss in the beginning, and I won't do it again. But this gentleman in the back wanted to test. Would you like to do it before the break or after?
Yeah, I'll do it now.
Okay.
Okay, I have a few points here about.
Could you come to the microphone and?
I'd prefer to stand here.
Okay, could you? Okay, could you introduce yourself?
So yeah, no, Dan Yarder.
Thank you.
Okay, I made a few notes here. One, management of the fund, what to do with the money of the fund, how to measure the results when you do invest it. Worrying about the profit sharing that might take place by the manager, the social causes, how you can measure the effectiveness, et cetera. Having gone through this and haven't heard the testimony today, my suggestion is that the alternative, not of doing away with the permanent fund, is very much in order for this reason. 1789, this country, there was a document signed in the Constitution of the United States of America that laid the groundwork for a system called free enterprise. And free enterprise means that every individual in this room, in this state, we're talking about the state, you answer the question as to what are your needs, what are your social needs, what's the best allocation. This is up to the individual people to decide. They do not need another government agency to decide for them. This has been the cause of the present problems that you're talking about in the state of Alaska. As far as the concern of comparability, world countries, et cetera, because the question was brought up, why didn't they want to build the gas line? Why don't the crude oil operators want to be interested in that? They couldn't afford it. Not with the present tax structure, not with the debt that they had to undergo in order to pay for that pipeline. And a lot of that debt, direct benefits from the beneficiaries of that debt, are your New York banks. And one of the things I think the most positive idea I've heard today was from Dr. Lindauer. I think I've had the pleasure of reading some of his comments in a local newspaper. And I think he's an excellent, what I would call a modern Alaskan, that he has a vision of what the state of Alaska holds for the people here and for the nation, one, because of the resource, and now with the educated population you aren't getting up here. The only thing I would caution Dr. Lindauer on is this idea of necessarily needing, you know, we're talking about the government fund, I haven't heard anybody say that we don't need it at this point, is this channeling the money through the local financial institutions. They all belong to a little group called the Federal Reserve System, and those that just happen to be outside of that are in control of the control of the currency. That Federal Reserve System, if you want to go look into it, is basically run by the New York Federal Reserve Bank, and that in turn, if you do some more digging into your banking history, you'll find out the Federal Reserve Corporation is indeed a private corporation, not even Congress can audit them. That's particularly in New York, that is controlled by a big financial institution. So one way or the other, going through necessarily the banking chain, I believe finance will be one of the methods, but put the money in the pockets of the people. There's a tremendous, the lady economist up here referred to many times about you know, the standard of living, all this flushes of money, and we've got slums over here and whatnot. That actually really indicates that in the state of Alaska, even though there might be a gross amount, a very high paycheck for individuals, there's a lot of cost of living up here that other people, unless you live up here, you're not going to understand that. And so, when I look at the tax structure of the state, the sales tax, the income tax, your consumption tax, the gas pump, or wherever else, so I think people are very seriously missing the point to put that money in the pockets of people. You will not need an Alaskan home to do it. Free enterprise across the board, and I'll challenge anybody on a historical basis on an economic and business basis. Free enterprise is the most efficient system ever invented or known to man to allocate that resource called money to where it should go. And I think individuals and their own whatever philosophy, whatever religion they adhere to, they deserve that right. And that's why I'm totally opposed to the current fund for those right there. And let's see what else. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, and I've heard it from the economists numerous times today. We've got to discover what the needs of the people are, et cetera. That's a great idea, but let the people decide what the needs are. You don't need to spend the, I think the states have too many consultants, et cetera, that if you listen to what they're saying, not tell them, you pay a lot of money for it. And I think one of the people in particular that will come out is not great. You need to look into the wise background, really look into the background, right? I think that is enough. Thank you.
Would you like to answer a question before the break? Do you have a question?
No, I just had a comment before the break. It seems to me that with the last two speakers, we've more or less set the possible boundaries of this discussion. and maybe when we come back, we can confine ourselves within those boundaries.
Okay. 5 minutes and
thank you,
John.
Is somewhat premature. My main question in the back of my mind seems to state, well, who really is going to administer the fund? And it boils down to a very deep philosophical question. If we are going to allow the legislature in Juneau to dictate what happens in Alaska to funds like these, which provide an unusual and great opportunity for Alaskans to somehow affect local decision-making, local regional planning efforts. To me, this strikes of a very great disservice and injustice to areas of Alaska that have been left out over many, many decades. Uh, I was going to get into a number of other points, but what I would probably just say that that probably, to me, has to be readdressed more than anything else. I was going to get into things like, well, how does that, again, measure the effectiveness of the utilization, the regionalization of utilization of the fund? Well, certainly it would more enhance the possibilities for decision-making, the possibilities for effectiveness measurement, the development of innovative and creative ideas as to how to utilize rural areas of Alaska, and I happen to be from Deering, Alaska, which is up by the Arctic Circle, and I certainly recognize that there are resources in that area, renewable and non-renewable, that have not been tapped, that could be tapped, that certainly will be tapped, either by good sound planning, through good sound planning, or through a process forced upon the regional corporations that are there now because of their non-involvement in a windfall fund like this. What I'm saying is that the state of Alaska certainly has an opportunity to guard its environment, to guard its integrity in all areas, its streams, its wildlife, its fish, to guard also a culture that is fast disappearing. These are assets that cannot be regained, cannot be in any manner brought back. And what I'm hoping is that we will look at this fund in a different sense than we look at just another dollar or two in our pocket. What I'm hoping is that we can, in some manner, incorporate all of Alaska into this planning and utilization of these donors. I think a regionalization of planning efforts would certainly bring about a more in-depth review of what is there than has ever been done before. It will not only identify the resources that are there, not renewable and non-renewable, but also the resources in human in humankind. We too many times, asininely, I have to say, assume so much. Assume that we have no resources of the humankind out there. We assume that they are having yet language problems, I hear, problems of identifying with a different culture, problems in getting to work on time. Well, you hear that from biased, judgmental, prejudiced, and sometimes bigoted individuals. You will hear that whether or not the rest of Alaska catches up and even surpasses the majority society. You'll hear that from the natives as well as the non-natives. You'll hear that from the blacks as well as the Hispanics. You'll hear that from everyone when they have a problem of identification and problem of realization that we are one. And you'll hear that all the time. What I'm saying is that this is an opportunity to do away with a lot of those problems. This is an opportunity to incorporate planning endeavors and planning opportunities for other groups that are not now in the planning. The planning that's going on, who have not been asked to participate, yet have 40 plus million acres that they're going to have to incorporate into your system, their own system, simply because they're citizens of the state, citizens of the country. And how are you going to say to them that you don't have to pull out your oil, you don't have to pull out your gas now, when they know they do have to now, because the society is forcing upon them their own rules of the game, forcing them to become involved in the 20th century capitalist system overnight, which is the system I believe in, by the way, even though I feel that cooperatives certainly will probably most likely work best in rural Alaska for many years, because the communal system has been too long inbred into our people to do away with it very quickly for a capitalist system that we face in Alaska. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't see how we can plan for the fund utilization until we have identified more clearly and more closely who in actuality is going to administer the fund. because if you do identify then areas by region of the state of Alaska, and I view Alaska as six states, not one, six areas of Alaska that are somewhat separate from each other. If you do identify those areas for planning purposes, you will then identify how the fund would be utilized. Because each part of Alaska, different, you have no real commonality between southeastern Alaska and northwest Alaska. One is a fishing and timber industry based area, and the other is a subsistence area. The two are not in any manner similar. The only similarity might be in the fact that some communal systems still work in both parts of Alaska. If we then recognize that there are different parts of Alaska that need to be taken into consideration in our planning endeavors, and in the utilization of this fund, we then certainly must recognize that the administration and the utilization of the dollars and their actual expenditure and how they are best put to work for Alaskans and how they will best incorporate more equity into our lifestyles and how they will better do away with the inequities that cause the prejudices and the fears and the misinformation and the wasteland that sometimes we don't even like to speak of, and that is the fact that we do many times disallow each other a good lifestyle simply because we are different. I think that we need to reevaluate what we're doing with these dollars. We need to reevaluate in the sense that we need to take into consideration that we can't, as one group of people sitting in Juneau, dictate for all of Alaska a system that will be compatible to all of Alaska. Simply because there has never been a time when anyone has really looked at my part of Alaska, for instance, and never been a time when anyone has thoroughly looked at other parts of Alaska. It's an opportune time. It's an opportune time to make a pact with the national government on D2 lands that we should not actually determine what the D2 lands are going to be until Alaska has had the opportunity to utilize some of its new gained wealth to evaluate our state, to thoroughly recognize what's under the ground before we determine what it should be called on top of it. And I think that's something we should look at, some of the things that we need to very thoroughly evaluate. The gentleman made the comment that the educated are moving into Alaska. I hope they're not coming from places like New York and places where it has been shown that their system has failed miserably.
They are.
I hope it is not
let's not have any bigotry here.
Yeah. Not Maryland.
This is not a racial statement whatsoever. But I'm hoping that what we have in Alaska is a start of a new planning effort that can incorporate more of Alaskans on a regional basis. And I hope that you gentlemen don't take this as a personal thing, that I don't believe that the legislature should be by itself in handling these dollars. I think that the legislature has great wisdom. But I do believe the people out there who can plan and have some policy control over these dollars would certainly agree that they should be involved in final determination.
Thank you, Cliff. Can you stay for a question? Would you like? Okay, you'll have to speak up. Is there a question, Mr. Black? Representative Meekins?
Yeah, Cliff, I'm wondering if what you think about where would the greater benefit be. I suppose this is contained in your comments, but I wanted to ask you directly. If you think that there would be greater benefit in an Alaska Inc. type proposal where the income from the fund is directly distributed to people in the rural areas, for instance, or if you think that a development bank concept with planning agencies and regionalized as you have talked about would be preferable.
I think the Alaska more opportunity for Alaskans in general to see what they can really do when funds are now available. I haven't really made up my mind seriously on Alaska, Inc., whether or not I could go beyond the distribution of funds beyond the retirement level so that Alaskans who have lived here all their life don't have to leave the state to retire. I think that's a tragedy. It's a shame. It's the worst kind of injustice that can happen to people who have come up here, who have lived here all of their life and then retired and have been forced by economics to leave our state simply because we lose their expertise, we lose their knowledge in vast areas that cannot be gained overnight. Only those people who have lived here for many, many years understand Alaska. And then we are losing them very rapidly. So I would say that the majority of dollars should be put into, not the majority of dollars because I can't even comprehend that kind of money, but a good amount should be put into the development of really significant homes for the aged, to take care of them and to keep them in the state so that we can utilize their expertise. Beyond that, I have still to make up my mind. I would certainly have made up my mind further had I been more comfortable with who would be administering the fund in the long haul.
Senator Rohde.
Cliff, could I ask you another question with regard to the administration? I'm as concerned about it as you are. Do you favor a method of electing members to the Permanent Fund Board or an appointed mechanism such as has been embodied in the governor's bill?
If it was done on elected representation is always good if it is on a regional level. If you put it into a state level, a good portion of Alaska is left out of any major decision-making possibility. I view the permanent fund in the sense that it's an opportunity for a full type of revenue sharing that would incorporate the different costs in Alaska. For instance, it's you buy a dozen eggs in a barrel right now, it'll cost you $2 or more. The cost of service, the cost of product, the cost of anything that happens in Barrow is tremendously different from the cost in Anchorage. What I'm saying, I guess, simply is that if there is a revenue sharing device used for the distribution of these dollars, and it incorporates very clearly the different cost of living differentials, and it is distributed in that sense, then I could see a regionalization utilization based on election processes and very well could even see it go beyond that to dictate that a particular community would be represented and a person from each community would be represented on a regionalized board so that you wouldn't have to have any communities left out of the process.
Your main concern is to ensure that some of the areas of Alaska which have a smaller amount of population are represented on whatever permanent fund administrative body is finally formed. Is that kind of...
Yeah. I guess what my concern is, I'll go back to our comments about this federal system in Alaska, the paternalistic system that has for many, many years placed its hand on our head and said, we will do this for you, and have never reached the point where they've done anything that we wanted them to do. They've always gone and done things as they wanted to do them. What I'm saying is that in this case, we would like to, I would like to see, since we're all citizens of the same state, since we are all a part of the same state, that there be some manner where all of Alaskans will determine the direction and the utilization of these funds.
Thank you, Mr. Black. Are there questions from the audience? We have panelists here. We don't want to keep them on their toes. And if you have some questions, Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me from here all right?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I want to congratulate you on getting this group together. I can assure you it's been stimulating and very thought-provoking. And I hope you'll keep up the good work, because the total picture can only be seen once that all the various, however conflicting they might be, parts of the picture come before you. And keep up the good work.
Thank you, Chad. I didn't ask for that plug, but...
But I did that, so that's unusual.
Okay.
But I really have two questions for the panel that developed this morning, but I can't help but be a little bit facetious. There was a person that testified here a little earlier this afternoon that made a suggestion as to how to use some of the permanent fund funds, and I felt I should provide you also with a corollary suggestion for their use. Instead of buying all of the federal lands that are put up for oil and gas leases, or along with that, I suggest that we buy the national interest lands and thereby immediately solve the need to two questions. Mr. Chairman, through you, I would like to ask the panelists or anyone that would care to comment. We did hear earlier comments about, one, loaning money, two, investing money. And there was even a suggestion earlier, some comment about investing in a pipeline or a petrochemical plant, state fund. My question to the panelists and to the our learned economists, if they have any background on this, if they care to comment, does the potential for a conflict of interest develop when a taxing entity becomes a participant in the profitability of a taxable entity?
You want to take that?
I will, if you like, I'll read the other question before you sit down.
No.
The next question is there a degree of parallelism, at least in some facets, between what is before you, Mr. Chairman, with this permanent fund, and what had to be before the U.S. Congress some years ago when they were faced with trying to see that each and every native Alaskan got a fair share out of the Alaska Native settlement? And is there a parallelism? That's my second question.
I'll leave that up to the panelists and the economists. Anyone who wants to speak up?
Well, I'm really no expert on the problems of taxable entities. The notion of some of the investment proposals put forth recently here remind me very much of where I now live. I happened to have moved to Canada this last few months. And in Canada, there are a truly astounding number. They talk a lot about free enterprise, like everybody. They're just an astounding number of what they call their crown corporations. Federal crown corporations and provincial crown corporations. Now, when you say, is there a conflict of interest, they attempt at least, by this device called a crown corporation, to make the crown corporation totally operate like an individual business enterprise, despite the fact that the state or the province or the nation owns all the shares. Sometimes not all the shares, most of the shares. I think if you survey the record of those crown corporations, it is dismal. Just recently, they have a crown corporation selling what Westinghouse sells, atomic reactors. And they got involved in a little bribery, but the most significant thing is they managed to sell two of their atomic reactors to Argentine at a loss of $130 million. The same thing is going...
They had a bribe in the tank?
Yeah, oh yes, they had a bribe in the tank. And in fact, according to unnamed but high place sources, in fact, $130 million is a lie. It's more than that. The province of Alberta has something called an Alberta Heritage Fund, and they're busily in the business of setting up businesses that otherwise wouldn't be there, and irrigation facilities, food packing plants, huge petrochemical operations, developing tar sands. And the other thing they're doing is providing more services than otherwise would be the case, and at lower taxes. They're the lowest tax province in Canada by some piece. The result is that enormous number of people are leaving the rest and going there. And those people are, the wages are lower there than they are where I happen to live now in British Columbia, but the people are all moving there. That's where the jobs are. It is not benefiting, as far as I can see, the average Albertan at all. The rents are going up, the land is getting scarce, and I see very little merit. Quite apart from the conflict of interest problem.
Is there any comment on the second half of that question, which was there any parallel between the native land claims and what we might be trying to do with the permanent fund? Mr. Love? Okay.
Dr. Gordon's
sure.
Comment.
Go ahead.
Dr. Gordon, do you operate out of British Columbia right now?
Right now, yes.
Well, It's my understanding in the British Columbia that under the new Democratic Party that there was a lot of acquisitions in terms of crown corporations, and then as a result of partially because of their policy for rapid acquisitions and some problems in the insurance industry, that the new Democratic Party was defeated and replaced by the conservative government of Mr. Bennett. But it's also my understanding that Mr. Bennett's conservative government has not divested themselves of any of the acquisitions made by the NDP, and that most of them, in fact, are now on the whole profitable. Is that an accurate summation of the, just as a parallel to the experience of the federal crown corporations, looking at British Columbia, where you teach?
No, not entirely. To describe the present government as conservative, I think, is quite incorrect. We have two kinds of parties in British Columbia. One is socialist, and the other is more socialist. secondly, it is not true that those things have become profitable. It is not true they've all been losers. In fact, if you investigate in the theory of the finance that they teach in business schools, it is extremely difficult to lose money consistently by investing. And the NDP did not succeed in doing so. But to be a little more serious, some of their acquisitions, a distressing number of their acquisitions, have lost money. And they perhaps could have been defended on the grounds that they had some social purpose. But if there's a great dispute about what the social purpose was and whether it helped anybody significantly. I say in Canada, there's all kinds. The conservative government of another province in the Far East, in New Brunswick, they've bought all kinds of things, setting up, their conservative government and got into an endless stream of businesses, nearly all of which went bankrupt. The one advantage, incidentally, of the Crown Corporation, it isn't like many of the corporations into which the British government bails people out, because they set up a corporation, and it is like a private corporation. When it goes bankrupt, it's bankrupt. And so it doesn't continue forever just draining off the public purse. That is a legal device which I think is of some usefulness.
Okay,
but I think there's a great parallel. See, I don't know, it's a little hard to classify political opinion. It seemed to me so simple that a liberal, radical person interested in the poor and egalitarianism should be for one thing, and that is give the money to everybody, if they could, which they can't. Okay, invest it as good income as possible and give that good income to the people. And that would do more for the rural Alaskans. And it would be an immediately equalizing phenomenon. I cannot think of one thing that's been proposed here that is going to would do nearly as much for the poor in Alaska as that kind of proposal.
Which you've stated on several occasions.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we've got the difference of philosophy pretty well outlined there. Is there any comment on the second half of that question or another question from the audience? Okay. Go ahead, John.
I think the answer to Mr. Chatterton's second question is yes.
Yeah, okay. That's the kind of answer I like. Mr. Dave Hickok, did you have a comment and a question, rather?
The proper solution for the native land claim back. Our insisting and others massage it further. But in effect, what has happened here is that there has been a corporate development bank developed among some of the native regional corporations. And I think there's some lessons to be learned from the parallels that are happening. I have some other comments at the time for the later, perhaps.
I believe this gentleman in the red shirt, you wanted to ask a question.
Comments?
Could you identify?
Not specifically questions or even answers.
Okay.
My name is Alan Wicks. I'm a recently retired teacher in the Anchorage School District the past 20 years. I came to Alaska initially in 1940 working for the Territorial Department of Health, and at that time supported our chairman's grandfather, Governor Greening, Territory of Alaska, in his efforts to roll back an unseemly rate increase by Alaska Steamship Company, and have been a more or less a Greening supporter ever since. The one thing that is lacking in all of this commentary and discussion as to profits, investment, management, there's one thing that is lacking, because it seems as if everybody is making the effort to play God for everybody else. And while we like our benefits and we like our dividends, and I like them as well as anybody else, and have been lucky, and like the Wall Street Journal has said, nothing succeeds like dumb luck. You know, that little bit of that can go a long way if you're on the lucky end. I want to put a diagram on that board. As a teacher, I just can't resist the opportunity as a late teacher, and then I'm going to come back and make a couple of comments about it, and then a question at the end.
Okay, it's getting a little late. We want to keep everyone interested.
I really didn't need the eraser, and I didn't want to wipe off the rest of that. There have been some allusions, and maybe I'm just, well, no, I'm not. Just reiterating what a couple other people have said. We've arrived at a place in international affairs, in national affairs, and in Alaskan affairs, in United Nations affairs. I'll flash back to pre-World War II and the Depression times. We've arrived now with technology and science, and my background is basically biological science. We've arrived now at a place where humanity, with its science and technology, doesn't really know where it's going. But I submit to you, and this is an independent personal formulation, I won't give the blame to anybody else, but unless and until humanity arrives at an umbrella concept, and that's what that is, and an umbrella concept of first, basic, foremost, environmental, ecologic concern before the fund, before the investment of the fund, before the applications from the return from the fund, what I'm saying is that civilization and humanity at this juncture is up against it. And if we don't learn or haven't learned what the Aborigines, the native peoples, learned long ago, was to live and operate in concert with nature, with Earth, not as its master, not as God, who says, I'll scrape it, I'll build it, I'll erect the edifices in my own in my own way and to my own needs and beliefs and likes. Now, I'm going to leave that idea, but I think it's the one that needs the most emphasis first and before just about anything else. But I'd like to turn to the panel, and while I respect and admire Dr. Lindauer's views. He is, as a relatively new and accurate, able observer of the Alaskan scene. I'd like to ask him how he discriminates, on the one hand, between the need for application of funds to this or that industry or development, to get to specific point, or the abhorrence of the use of the funds, but because they would be an economic magnet to people elsewhere to come to Alaska. But on the other hand, and I'm tickled to death I've got it, my 5.25% FHA, if it is made available to them, it's not going to just be the people who are here now. Not by a long shot. There are going to be a horde on horde who are attracted to the magnet of 4% or 5% or 7% Alaska-style FHA, benefit of the fund.
Would you like to comment on that?
We're not going to be able to differentiate between those things in any way. And I submit a comment in the chat.
Thank you, Mr. Wick.
That's really an excellent question. If you have a legislature this law, those who are eligible by type of loan and recipients of those types of loans, then the financial institutions could make it. It would be very possible, perhaps desirable and proper, to specify not only the kinds of loans that could be made, but who is eligible to receive them. One could easily say that you could use the same, for example, criteria as Alaska Inc. is using as eligibility for low-interest loans for business, so that it could in fact be those people who are here now and have such a time horizon for qualification that no one in their right mind would come up to spend 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years, or you pick the number, in order to qualify. But once firmly qualified, would then be eligible. And one would assume that a utility serving a native village would be instantly qualified. One would assume that a long-term Alaskan would be instantly qualified. The question is, where are you going to draw the line? Wouldn't seem to be that difficult.
Let me ask you a question about Alaska Inc. Suppose you have two kids born the same day, and one of them is the child of a long-term resident, and the other one is the child of someone who's not a long-term resident. Are you going to give one of them the Alaska Inc. payment and not the other?
Well, the governor isn't here to defend himself. The more you get into the Alaska Inc., you see the more difficult it is to exactly define who an Alaskan is or who's the beneficiary. Doesn't mean it's impossible, but obviously if it's going to be a meaningful program, you've got to draw the line somewhere.
And it I understand that you might be able to draw it for adults, but I think if what you're trying to do is enfranchise only those who are here now and their descendants, you've got a tough row to hoe. I don't think you can do that.
Alaska Inc. does have a residency. The child isn't really eligible until it's been here a certain set number of years.
Tested.
Yeah. Dr. Lindauer?
One could, for example, require an 18-year residency, because I believe that at 18 one can enter into contracts or whatever is the legal age for entering the contracts, and that means every child would be eligible if they'd lived here long enough, as would anybody who arrived, since everybody would be a child when they arrived.
It's not going to stand up constitutionally.
I was waiting for John to say that.
I know that's being studied. I'm sure there's some way you can find a way, but we're not here to discuss that. Somebody hasn't made a comment yet. Mr. Hickok, would you like to follow up on your...
I'd like to say a couple of things, like 5 cents worth of subjects that I don't think anybody wants
to buy. Why don't you come up to the mic?
I'm the director of the Arctic Environmental Information and Data Center at the University of Alaska, currently the president of the Alaska Division of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. I think there's two or three items that seems to me have not been covered. One of the things the economists say, or seem to appear to say, is that need on the curves is a function of economics alone. I'd like to say that I don't think it is. And I'd like to give a few examples of what's happened in history in Alaska. One of the needs trends that has determined what has happened in Bush, Alaska, has been, for example, many years ago in the Arctic latitudes here, we did a lot of research on ionospheric scatter and so on. And we were able to then develop satellite communication systems for these latitudes, which was not a possibility under existing technology of lower latitudes. Now, what has happened here is that because communication was available to Bush Alaska technologically, and because there was a political decision made by very, very few people for the sale of the Alaska communications system in about 1970, the whole need trend for communication and the development of this kind of thing in rural Alaska changed, not by virtue of economics, but by virtue of technology and science, and by virtue of a political decision. There also have been a number of other of these kind of things in the health field. Two doctors made the breakthrough tuberculosis following World War II here in Alaska, and the highest incident rate in the world in the early 1950s of birth rate and death rate in rural Alaska beat the Kohlrabi Desert in Africa and everywhere else, were brought down by science and technology, and the application of money, in that sense, I'll give you the economics of it, of a political decision to stamp out disease. Now, these things make aspirations. These things make needs that are not just driven by the common marketplace. So I would suggest, in addition to the economics of capital investment and so on, there are at least three or four other items that are driving the need coefficient, and that is law and politics and law, which I put in despite Mr. Havelock's qualms, hand in glove, science and technology, and perhaps a population expansion. These things are making change in Alaska, and the need curve is escalating at a tremendous rate, despite what happens in economics. The aspirations of the Bush communities, where there are hundreds of them, have no water, no sewer, no school. These aspirations are real, and they are going to drive a demand for public expenditure of funds to satisfy these problems. I would certainly agree with John Havelock that the Statehood Act called for the expenditure of tax revenues to support a burgeoning new state. I would also suggest to you that the Alaska Native Land Claims Act also had the same effect. The one thing that Alaska has not recognized, or several things it hasn't recognized, but one of the ones it hasn't recognized, is that rural Alaska should not pay the price for the public services that everyone else in Alaska enjoys in the urban settings through their compensation dollars that came under the Native Land Claims Act. They are entitled to the same public services that anyone else. I guess that's about enough. Thanks.
The economist or the legal field would like to respond.
Well, I'm the one that introduced the word, and when you started talking, I instantly regretted it. But then I recalled that I had put quotes around it. I absolutely agree with you that there is no such thing as an absolute need. You can't take a certain desire and say this particular desire is a need and this particular desire is not a need. What I was trying to point out here, though, is that if the population were to grow, just to maintain a certain level of services would require a growing trend of revenues, which is an entirely different point.
I think you're right. I think, but regardless of that, the need curve, the demand curve, perhaps,
yes,
social aspiration, human aspiration, is escalating at a tremendous rate, regardless of the economics of the state. That's what I was.
Yes. Well,
Broader expansion in health, in education, in other factors.
Well, I think what you're saying is what some other people have said, that perhaps it would be more reasonable to use the revenues for the oil revenues for this kind of purpose, use them all perhaps for that kind of purpose, setting up schools, setting up water supplies, setting up electrification plants, and instead of either sending them to these much maligned New York brokers to be kept for future generations, or perhaps giving concessional loans to people in Anchorage. That, I think, is a matter simply of social policy, and you've got to fight it out.
Well, I agree.
That's not a matter of economics. That's a matter of really what you can get the people in the state to spend their income on. I thought that the Supreme Court had said that schooling had to be provided throughout a state on a more or less equal level. I think a famous California case to that.
Well, we had one here in Alaska, too.
And so I don't quite understand the fact that it has been done already.
Russ? Yeah, just, Doctor, are you saying that expectations are not related to, or needs, expectations, whatever you want to call it, are not related to the economics? It seems to me,
I think they're related, but I think there are a number of external forces that make new aspirations.
Right.
Prior to the research on ionospheric scatter and so on that made possible high altitude communication systems, there were no aspirations for it because nobody knew it could be done.
Well, that's what it seems to me to
now,
be the
there are a lot of these kinds of things. That before you could put a sanitation system in an Arctic permafrost scene, you have to know how to do it. Then, by virtue of it being able to be accomplished, there's aspiration for it.
Well, I think that's the common denominator between the two, because when you have money, it's therefore possible to build things, and it's therefore possible to do things, and when you have new technologies, other things become possible that weren't before,
it's
the possibilities that seems to fuel the needs, the desires.
No, I think that the possibility may fuel the need, but not necessarily money. Now, in the case of, for example, the communication situation here in Alaska, that wasn't really a function of money.
No, I'm not limiting it to money.
It's a function of science and technology and a political decision to sell the Alaska communication system away from the military and put it into modern science.
Yeah, just to clarify, I'm not limiting it to money. I'm saying that things being possible is the common denominator between technology and economics in your scenario, because even if the technology made it possible to have telecommunications, if we didn't have the money, even if we had the political will, if we didn't have the money, we wouldn't have it.
Then I would go back to Tussing's scenario. I think what Tussing is saying is that the private sector, the private demand for these things is running it, and we have a large sector of private money by virtue of native land claims and the growth in the Alaskan economy. And when it gets into economics, that's what I want to really shut up. But
Thank you.
Don't have much.
Thank you, Mr.
Hancock. Thanks,
Clark. Okay, in the waning hours, are there any more questions? Sure, you're welcome to ask again if there's anybody that hasn't had a chance to ask a question. Fine.
Again, identify myself as Lieutenant Colonel Fisk, retired. And I'd like to say first that I strongly support Dr. Lindauer's position on adequate investment of permanent fund in Alaska at the lowest reasonable interest rates, and where present Alaskans can enjoy the benefits of employment, social amenities, health services, recreation, etc., etc., etc. It would appear that the permanent fund should continue to receive input as long as our resources last into the indefinite future, to possible amounts much in excess of the figures that we are now discussing. If this is true, why worry about the future generation? The input will continue to come in, the earnings will continue to be there. I'm interested in providing something to occupy the leisure time of the many in small communities, particularly during the long winter hours. Something that involves all ages of both sexes, from youth to octogenarianism. Most of our rural communities have churches and bars, but many have little else to occupy the people when they're not busy making a living or subsisting. It seems to me that an excellent way to use some of the earnings
possibly some of the permanent fund would be to develop a program to provide indoor recreation facilities. I refer to curling, skating, and I'd like to draw a comparison with what the Canadian government has done. Many, many of their small communities have been funded to build curling, skating facilities, which also provide a community, a place where the community can assemble for all kinds of things. I believe that if the permanent fund and the native regional corporations get together, many of these small communities could be provided with something that would knit the communities together. Their needs then would be brought forth as a community organization or community requirement. I think it would do much to knit the communities together throughout the state of Alaska. I would suggest that all of the other comments today have been primarily on what to do with the fund. I submit that this is just one idea that might be considered in providing for Alaskans who can enjoy it through all ages. Thank you.
Thank you. In bringing this to a close, I want to ask the audience once again if there's any questions they would like to ask of the panel that haven't.
I'd like to make a comment on that last one.
Mr. Havlock.
I think if the permanent fund committee does adopt some sort of internal investment policy as part of the permanent fund, you should be careful at the same time to keep account of the public costs that are going to be associated with that private investment. Dr. Gordon could comment on what kind of ratios those are, but it's clear if you're going to be giving money for loans for small business, et cetera, that you are going to kick off at the same time a lot of pressure for public amenities that go with that. And if you haven't taken proper account of that, you're going to create substantial social unrest.
Well, no, I can't really answer that. I would be very surprised, however, if you could make some generalization about that. It would certainly be the case in some specific investments that if you subsidized investment in the private sector, that it might entail a considerable amount of public spending outside of that, and in other cases, perhaps a small, very much smaller amount. I think you'd have to investigate each on a case-by-case basis.
Okay. Mr. McCutcheon, you are going to make the last question then.
All right. Okay. Probably it's going to turn out to be a rhetorical question. Directed to several things here, I'd like to make a statement. Professor Gordon, you challenged Paul Fuchs' estimation of the rate of return on the investment of Prudhoe Bay. I don't necessarily share Mr. Fuchs' view of what should be done, but I thought that you might possibly give us some idea of your estimation of the rate of return on Prudhoe Bay, and maybe you could start with your opinion of the size of the reservoir, the amount of recovery under current production practices, the amount left in the ground, the amount of additional recovery through secondary and tertiary treatment, what will be the value of oil and price of oil on the West Coast, what will be the value of the oil delivered to the West Coast, what is the value of the investment that's going to be had in the is on the North Slope now. What are the O&M costs? And what are the profits that are attributable to tax relief and tax loopholes?
Well, may I just interject here? These are very interesting questions, and I think they at least have some relevance to the permanent fund.
That's all right, Clark. It's rhetorical.
Well, I'd like to answer that. In the first place, nobody can make that question. Anybody who thinks he can tell you the price of oil 10 years hence, as has been suggested around here, is engaged in witchcraft. Let me explain one other thing.
All right.
That what I wanted to do was find out how this Prudhoe Bay, the figure came out $98 billion, and I happen to know that's the sum total of all American corporations from Ma and Pa ones up to Exxon all over the whole world in any one year after taxes. So he gave a figure which spread over 20 or 25 years, and he gave it gross, which is totally irrelevant.
Well, the picture really isn't spread over 25 years. That's a very classical mistake that's made here. And Mr. Havelock, you very should definitely ought to find out what the reservoir will produce in the ninth year and what it produces by the 15th year, and you might learn something, and maybe your idea of a long-run term is not correct. And Professor, you should learn what about Prude Hole Bay and find out about the numbers. They're very shocking. Well, neither here nor there. I'd like to go on here, if I might. I appreciate the problems of this community, and particularly the chairman's work, and particularly his deference sometimes. But I think you're going to have to go back and define why the permanent fund. I realize that this will be a very painful process. However, it's one that must be faced. There will be enormous political problems and political pressure placed on the committee not to do it. But I cannot see how this committee can determine where it's going to go and what you're going to do when you get there, unless you know where you've been and how you got to where you are. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. I think that's a perceptive comment, and in a way, this symposium kicks off that search for what people meant when they and what they wanted the fund to mean. There'll be a series of meetings that this committee and the Senate Permanent Fund Committee will be engaged in. We're going to Fairbanks next week. We're going to Kotzebue. There'll be further meetings in Anchorage and Southeastern before we draft any specific legislation. Long about November or December, the committee will probably draft some legislation for the entire legislature to consider. At that time, there'll be specific hearings and the more formal type hearing process for people to comment on the bill. And I really want to thank everyone here for coming and devoting their afternoon to this problem. I think it's, although we reach no conclusions, I think exploring philosophically the problems of establishing this fund is beneficial to us so that we have some ground to stand on before we launch into anything specific. And I want to thank the economists who have come a long way and have added to this discussion, and particularly the committee members who have spent their afternoon and the panelists. And the Alaska Humanities Forum for helping to pay for it. And if there are any comments from the rest of the committee, you'd like to hear.
Yeah, thank you, Clark. One very brief thing. I think probably most people here know this already, but in case there's someone who doesn't, we've been concentrating on the permanent fund today, but the committee is also charged with thinking about the same questions in regards to the Renewable Resource Development Fund, which takes 5% of the same revenues that the permanent fund takes 25% of. So it's about It is different in some situations, but at least initially, it's the same kind of thing, only it's one-fifth as large, which is still extremely large, and it's dedicated to enhancement of renewable resources. So if people are interested in the permanent fund, they may want to think about that, and there will be some meetings in regards to that in Anchorage, too, I think, in the future.
Senator Rohde.
Clark, on behalf of the Senate Permanent Fund Committee and the Chairman, Senator Holman, I'd like to thank the House for putting this symposium on. This is the first in a series of meetings that the Senate and the House will be participating in. The House effort is more visible here in Anchorage because Chairman Greening has done a very good job of getting the committee's work planned and accomplished. The Senate committee's work is being done primarily in Juneau at this point, and we're trying to work in conjunction with the House to provide as much possible information on the permanent fund as we can before our January deadline of trying to draw up legislation. If there are questions or concerns, I know either the House or the Senate would be happy to address them,